I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Payden Squires. He is a CPA and a CFP. He's also the founder of Squires Tax Planning. They help business owners simplify tax and wealth strategies so they can grow with clarity and confidence. Their focus is proactive planning, long-term impact, and helping entrepreneurs align their finances with their biggest goals. Let me just say this. If your CPA is your tax strategist, you've got a problem and you need to listen in. Payden, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be on the show.
And I realize you're a CPA. I'm not trying to diss that, but we'll get into that later. I hope I didn't offend you there.
No offense.
but I think that's a mistake a lot of people make. They say, "Hey, my CPA is taking care of it." I can say from personal experience that I've gone to my former CPA with more tax strategies than he brought to me.
Yeah. That's what I would tell you, Craig. It's very, very common. The industry is not really set up to do that. I mean, you know, most CPA firms are designed to be tax preparers, and that's fine. And they prepare taxes and they do a really good job. The issue is people like, you know, you go to them looking for a service that they really don't provide is the thing. You're going to them for something that their business isn't set up to do. They're really just set up to prep taxes.
Yeah. Which is good.
It needs done. You're just not necessarily going to get what, you know, that strategy piece from them unless they specifically design their business to do that.
Yeah. Well, so let's go back in time. Where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
Yeah. So a very small town kid from central Missouri. You know, currently I live in Columbia, Missouri, which is right in the middle of Missouri, about an hour and a half outside of Kansas City and St. Louis, home of the University of Missouri. I actually grew up in a little town outside of Columbia, a town of about 1,000 people. So very, very rural farming area. Grew up on the Missouri River. You know, my story kind of goes back to, you know, growing up small town, growing up with single mom. You know, I had a dad kind of in and out of the house, struggled with alcohol and drugs and stuff over the years. So, you know, we had some financial insecurity. As a kid, my mom worked super hard raising two kids on her own, working multiple jobs, and she even got her MBA at night call it 20, 25 years ago. But through all that, you know, my mom certainly faced some struggles, had some layoffs, and we had some financial insecurity at times. Like, we weren't, you know, the poorest people in the world, but at the same time, like, I could tell, like, there was some strain there, you know, as an 8-10-year-old kid, I certainly felt that. And it made a huge impression on me. I knew, you know, as that 8-10-year-old, 12-year-old in those years in there, that I never wanted to be poor. I never wanted to have financial insecurity. And so that really motivated me to go into the money space, you know, going through college and learning all I could about money. And I ended up majoring in finance and accounting. Came out of college in the 08, 09 kind of time frame. Everybody in finance was getting fired from their job, so who would hire me? So I ended up going back and got my MBA. From there, I worked a couple corporate jobs, figured out pretty quickly that, you know, working as an employee wasn't for me. I was much more entrepreneurial minded. But while I was working for those jobs, studied in secret in my cubicle for the CPA exam, passed all the parts of the exam, or all four parts of the CPA exam, told my boss, "Hey, I'm out of here," quit my job, and opened up what eventually has become Squires Tax Planning. I opened up that business in 2014. In my living room in little tiny Fayette, Missouri, and kind of grown it into the team and what it all is today.
That's cool. How big is the team?
We're five at the moment, looking to expand from here.
Very cool. Very cool. And just out of curiosity, what type of businesses do you typically work with?
Yeah, it's really what I would say is we're very entrepreneur focused, right? And business owner focused. It's not really industry specific. Well, like real estate, we do a ton in real estate because there's a whole lot of tax planning that can go into real estate. It's really just business owners that got, you know, enough revenue going on that, you know, there's enough value could drive there. We say, you know, seven figure plus business owners, because almost in every one of those situations, I can come in there and find efficiencies that they aren't taking advantage from a tax perspective.
Very cool. You know, it's interesting growing up in a small town. Now, I grew up in a town of 13,000, a lot bigger than 1,000.
Yeah.
But, you know, my wife occasionally talks about moving to a small town. And she grew up in Arlington, Texas. And as, you know, we met in Austin, Texas,
yeah.
I said, it's nice. There's a lot of nice things about it, but you will have no anonymity. Everybody will know you and they'll know everything about you.
Yep. That's so true, right? The one good piece is because, well, you know, the little town I live, shout out to Glasgow, my family was actually from another smaller town, probably 10 miles away. So I was actually one of the few people in the town that wasn't related to literally everybody in the town. Because it really is. And to make things even more interesting, like this is a big Catholic town. So yeah. It goes back to like almost everybody my age, like had the same great grandparents, you know, and they all had, you know, like 10 kids, and it's really like three or four families like making up, you know, the vast majority of the town. So there's like five or six last names and then a spattering of other last names. But, you know, a handful of families are make up the vast majority of the town.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a little bit of that going on. There's a few names that were, you know, very common. Limits the dating pool.
Yes, it does. See, but I was a free agent. I was wide open. I wasn't limited.
Yeah. So, that was really interesting that, you know, you come out in 08 in the middle of the crisis.
Yeah.
And, you know, grad school is like always the checkbox. Can't get a job. Okay.
Go back to grad school. Can't pay your student loans. Go back to grad school.
Very cool. Now, and what was your, it was an MBA, not an MFA?
Yeah. So, you know, I got my bachelor's in business and majored in accounting and finance and management. And then, yeah, I just got like a generic MBA from my alma mater, Columbia College. Shout out to them.
Oh, very cool. So let's dive into the tax strategy versus a CPA. You know, and I'll just, I was attending some talk and somebody started talking about the Augusta rule.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I can do that. And I went to my CPA and he was like, oh yeah, that's something that's available. And I'm like, dude, you've been doing my taxes for like 8 years.
Yeah.
Why didn't you mention that?
Yeah.
But I had to kind of go in and do all the work, you know, including the strategy of, you know, what I was told was use VRBO, you know,
yeah.
go get
like
a rate
yeah.
as a comp, which I did. And then fortunately, one of my neighbors, I'm in a neighborhood where you're not allowed to VRBO, but I had a neighbor that put theirs out and it was like a ridiculously high number. And so I was like, two doors down, you know, I can sit across this table from an auditor and say, here's my comp.
Yeah.
The one thing my accountant had me do was like, he wasn't comfortable with me taking the full 24-hour rate. So he had me chop it down. I could argue that, but I don't know. What's your take on that?
Yeah. So the Augusta rule for listeners that don't know what that is comes out of Augusta, Georgia, the Masters tournament, right? The golf tournament that's there. So those lovely people, Augusta, Georgia, lobbied Congress to get to where anybody in the United States can rent out their personal residence for up to 14 days per year and not have to pay income taxes on it. So people, Augusta, Georgia, they all move out of town when everybody comes in for the tournament for 2 weeks and they all rent out their houses and don't have to pay taxes on it. So we can take advantage of that too as business owners. And what we do is what Craig was kind of explaining there is you're hosting legitimate business meetings in your home and paying yourself a fair rental rate for that. So the important part, if you're going to implement this strategy, is really making sure you document and put into place all the pieces of, hey, this meeting actually occurred. Here's lease agreements, here's comps, and we base this number off something real. All those things are important to put into place. But you're right. You know, when you went to your CPA, they didn't have any way to help you do that, right? Or they just like, oh yeah, sure, you can do that. We've designed a firm to help take advantage of a lot of those things, right? So we have a process around the Augusta Rule. We have a process around that, you know, clients that are working with us, that are planning with us, and, you know, ultimately doing taxes and stuff with us. We implement the Augusta Rule for everybody that can legitimately take advantage of it. And we develop a process to make it super easy to sign off on meeting notes and lease agreements and all these things, to where we store all that stuff for you guys. And it makes it super easy to do. Because, yeah, same time, I've told lots of people about the Augusta Rule for years, and they'll go to their accountant, and their accountant will be like, well, it's only, you know, it's probably only going to save you a few a few thousand bucks. Do you really want to do all of it? And they're not motivated to do any of it because they just want to prep your taxes and they're paid to file your tax return. And so, you know, they've just never developed a process to make it super easy. And that's what we've done to try to make that super easy. So yeah, we're going to grab this few thousand dollars in tax savings. Why wouldn't we do it? It's just doing some documentation.
Yeah. 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 And it's, you know, and it worked out for me. It's, you know, I bought in a neighborhood that when I bought, nobody knew it. Nobody knew about the suburb of Austin. And over time, the houses have appreciated significantly. So the rental rates. And so like my neighbors, their daily rental on that house is like $3,200, $3,200 a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I can still take just a fraction of that, and that adds up quickly.
Well, yeah. Well, let's say you even take, I don't know, just say you take, you know, half that, call it $1,800 a day. And once again, you know, all this stuff comes down to your personal situation. You need to, you know, caveat with all of that, but you know, that's $21,000 in income, right? If you did four, or even, heck, that's only 12 days. Let's do 1,800 times 14 days. It's $25,000 worth of income that theoretically is going to avoid income taxes. If it goes through the Augusta Rule, that $25K will avoid income taxes. You know, rough math, just say you're at a 30% effective rate. That's $7,500 that, you know what I mean, that you just saved in income taxes by taking the time to properly implement a strategy and document it.
That's a really nice cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can take my whole family of five to Cancun for a week on that easily.
Yeah. Yeah. So why is it? I mean, so there's some people that are still scratching their heads saying, well, my CPA knows all the rules. They should be doing this for me. Why does that not happen?
A couple reasons. Once again, you know, I kind of go back to the overall industry. There's some pressures on the industry, lots of different pressures on the industry. One, there was a survey in 2020, so 5 years ago, like pre-COVID, that said 75% of CPAs are nearing retirement. And that was 5 years ago. So total lack of like just sheer amount of people. Two, you know, regulations and compliance get more and more complicated every year. You know, every year, more, you know, tax returns have more boxes to check, more things to report, all those types of things. So the compliance gets more and more. And then three, like CPAs aren't, you know, some are great, some aren't necessarily running the, you know, aren't the best like managers of businesses and whatnot. So like the vast majority of firms are just built the old way of they're generalist. They do everything for everybody. They prep, you know, 10,000 tax returns all in like a 10-week time. And so everything is so time crunched, so crazy. And all they're doing is pumping out returns. And it's not, there just really is no motivation or process to do any of that. Nobody's set up to do it. Now most firms will do it for, you know, at least a few of their, you know, their best clients that they actually do a little bit of planning with, but 90% of those clients aren't really getting any kind of planning.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's the right structure to have? How, you know, if somebody's listening and for whatever reason they can't hire you, what do they need to have in place to make sure they're doing what they should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's just trying to find a relationship, you know, whether it's, you know, with me and my firm or somebody else, that's, it's more of like a proactive relationship, right? If you're really wanting to step your tax game up, you need to invest in that, you know, invest in a relationship with that, invest in a firm that can offer that. Because if the firm's good, and how we try to design our engagements is that, like, you're going to get a return on investment, right? We're going to help you implement different strategies. And yes, we may cost more than your account now, but like net net, when we do all our work and everything we're doing for you, you're going to be further ahead even by paying us more money. That kind of makes sense. It's really just finding somebody that actually does, you know, strategy and planning with you and has, you know, significant enough experience and significant enough experience with businesses your size and kind of know what's you're struggling with as an entrepreneur. So it's really just finding a relationship of more of an advisory, you know, a planning, advisory, proactive type relationship in the tax space. Because there is so much value to be found there and just so few people actually doing that work.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's something like, you know, I'm not a baseball fan, but I love using baseball analogies. You know, there's not like a single coach on the baseball team.
Yeah.
You know, you have like a dedicated batting coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he doesn't know how to play the other roles on the team, but that's his sole focus.
Yeah. Yeah. And depending on the size of your business, you know, you may even be looking at, you know, if you've grown a couple $1 million business or whatnot, you know, you may be looking at getting like an outsourced CFO or something, you know, somebody that would take over like the finance type functions of your business once you've grown to a big enough size that you need that. And it's the same thing with, like, you know, that in that CFO role is where you're going to get some strategy and stuff about business growth and business finance and all those kinds of things. This is the same thing, just really for taxes, right? And specifically there. And some CFOs do a little bit of tax work, but that's not their, you know, that's certainly not their focus either. So it's just really getting intentional around where you need that help. And to be quite honest with you, if you're a business owner of any size, the taxes are going to be your biggest expense over your whole, you know, life of your business. So to be able to get control of that and strategize around that and how you time things and how you recognize income, there's a whole lot of value somebody like my team can add there that allows you to be in a much better place than you would be without working with someone like us.
Well, you know, something I was just thinking, you know, if we go to the world of investing, mm-hmm. somebody would think that they're like an investment genius if they could consistently get like a 10 or 12% return.
You could do that every year without stop. You would be the greatest investor of all time. Yeah.
And what's like the typical, you know, you throw out a number, it was like a 33% return.
Yeah. 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 I mean, like, you know, you can get, when you're talking about, you know, in the stock market or financial markets or whatever, right? Like, you know, over the long haul, 8 to 10% return is like, that's historically kind of what it's performed. Yeah. The thing about business and running your own business is you can beat those returns all day long. If you know how to invest and move money around and get return on investment, it's kind of like paying for advertising, right? Like, advertising, hopefully it's not an expense. It's something that you're doing to get more money back, right? Like, it's like an investment, right? Same kind of thing with like, we're working with somebody, me, on like tax strategy. You know, we're going to go into there and get you more money back and get you net net in a much better place. And while we're very focused on tax and strategy and whatnot, we're also give a lot of business advice too, just knowing that, you know, I've worked with thousands, literally 1,000+ entrepreneurs and businesses of all different sizes, from anywhere from 1 to 25 million. So we see a lot of the same problems across the same sizes of business, and can often help spot bottlenecks even in other parts of the business and give a little advice around that too.
Well, I would also imagine that there's some thought, you know, when you're stuck in your silo, it's easy, you know, let's say your industry silo. One of the statements I hear all the time is, well, that's not how it's done in our business. And people get stuck into this thought of, here's how it's done. One of the advantages you bring is you see how it's done across different businesses. When you're like, you know, this worked over here. Yeah. I bet it would work for you as well.
Yeah. That's a huge advantage of the career I am in. Is that for the last, you know, 11 years, I mean, I can't tell you how many businesses I've seen, how many businesses I've seen financials on, right? I mean, thousands. and communicated with thousands of entrepreneurs, you know, between podcasts and clients and other business groups. And I mean, thousands upon thousands. And it allows you to start getting, you know, good pattern recognition. I'm a constant learner. I love reading books, podcasts. You know, that's why I do my own podcast where I just interview entrepreneurs all the time and get their stories of success and what they've done and struggled with and all those things. And it just allows me to be a better advisor to my clients, right? As I get all these stories and all these different things and learn more of how people are handling all the challenges and of the world, it allows me to, like, once again, while I'm very money focused and helping people grow their net worth, you know, as efficient as possible, there's a lot of other advice, you know, around mindset and how you attack things and how you think through things that we provide advice around too.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things I appreciated was when you said that marketing is not an expense.
Yeah. You
know, that's something, you know, obviously I do marketing and that's something I run into. They're like, no. This is a growth mechanism. But for some reason, whenever the economy gets tough, they cut marketing.
Yeah. Well, and it's because they don't have a proven enough system, right? Like you don't have if you have a proven enough, like marketing and sales system, where you know, like, okay, if you have a sales process to where, like, okay, a lead comes into the system and then you have it, like, a how does that lead funnel through your system and ultimately end up as like a customer? And if you do enough volume through there, you can get percentages of like, okay, you know, I basically need 3 leads to end up with 1 customer, you know, that actually closes. Well, you can back into all the math to where it's like, okay, the lifetime value of a client is worth $10,000 to me over the lifetime value of the client. Would I spend $3,000 over here on advertising to acquire a $10,000 client? Like, you know, and you can back into all those numbers and figure it out of like, hey, if my cost to acquire a customer is a couple $1,000 and they end up spending $20,000 with me over the next 2 years, like, would I make that trade? Make that trade all day long. Right. So it's getting those numbers so you can figure out, can you scale this and all those different things. Right.
Well, and that's, you know, it's funny. We were talking about how I was writing my LinkedIn newsletter early this morning. I was literally talking about lifetime value.
Yeah. Lifetime value of a customer. Huge.
And so we do something we call priming questions. And the job of priming questions is to prime the brain to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
So few people think about lifetime value. If I'm on a sales call, 1 in 20, 1 in 30 or 40, ask them what their customer lifetime value, they have no idea.
Yeah.
And the reason I ask is I want them to start thinking about the process that you just talked about. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you know, like I'll give you an extreme example. I asked him what the lifetime value of a client was, and he said, he kind of thought through it. He was like, between 4, and I'll coach him through because it's an important question. And he'll say, yeah, 4 to 5 million. That was the number he came up with. I was like, okay, well, if a new client's worth 4 to 5 million to you, how much would you be willing to spend to acquire a new client? He's like, probably 1 million. I'm like, well, crap, my job just got easy. I mean, I can drive a bus through that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I was literally talking to my marketing guy yesterday that does ads and stuff for us. And like, we were talking about CAC, which is cost to acquire a customer, CAC. And we were talking about LTV, lifetime value of a customer. Right. And the cool thing about like my business and professional services is it's very sticky, right? Like, you know, people, you find a good relationship, you know, somebody's with me 4 to 5 years or whatever, right? On average, but maybe even longer. But so I can take, you know, when you're thinking about lifetime value, I can take, okay, what's the average annual contract that somebody pays me, right? That comes on planning. Okay. That's my average number. I can multiply that by 4 to 5, something like that, and get a conservative lifetime value of a client. So it's whatever my average annual client is times, you know, call it 4 to be really conservative. Okay. That's the lifetime value of my client. What would I be willing to spend to acquire that client, right? And keep in mind, you also got the cost of servicing them and whatnot. But like, that's how you can get into the math and really realize that advertising and marketing can be just a return on investment. That you're okay, you're spending $2,000 to acquire a $40,000, you know, client. You would buy that at, you would spend $2,000 to buy a $40,000 asset all day long, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. A number of years ago, I was talking to somebody who a CPA. Maybe you can help me answer this question because I've run into this a lot with the financial types. But he was talking about how he was launching new service. He was going to charge something like $350 a month, you know, to basically keep your books, and that would include doing your taxes at the end of the year. Now, it's a bargain. I think he's since upped his prices. And we were having this conversation in January or early February, I forget which, you know, whatever year it was. And I asked him, I said, how much capacity do you have? I said, if you could take on five new clients right now, do you have the capacity to do it? He's like, oh, yeah. I said, well, here's what you do. You reach out to your list and say, hey, we're launching this new service. If you sign up for this new service, we'll do your tax filings this year for free. And he was appalled. He was absolutely appalled that I recommended that. And I was like, he's like, well, it's worth a lot more. I'm like, dude, you can get five new clients right now for your new service that you're launching that are worth a whole lot more money than what you're losing on this year's tax preparation.
Yeah, and that's what I would tell you is accountants are notorious for that, notorious for undervaluing their work and charging way less than they should. And that's why they get 10,000 tax returns and they do everything for everybody and can't provide any strategy whatsoever. So like what you just described there is, I don't know, 80, 90% of CPA firms, to where it's just like they undercharge, they discount their value. So then they're just box checkers and not realizing that, you know, if they actually, you know, niched out a little bit, kind of stood for something and charged their prices, they could, I mean, they would still have plenty of work to do and they would make way more money.
Well, and the thing that got me was he rejected my strategy. And of course, March 15th came and went. So that offer would have no longer worked, but it was like several months later, I think it was like five or six months later, he was celebrating landing his first client. And I was like, dude, you could have had five clients. Yeah, whatever money you thought you were losing, you would have just had all that in the pipeline.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like investing. Everything's on timelines, right? Like he couldn't see that far down. You know what I mean? He wasn't playing that game. He was playing a much shorter game, right? Of getting through tax season. And that's where, you know, you get so much stuff going on, your timeline gets shorter and shorter and you make decisions shorter and shorter timelines. And that's usually not good. Generally, if you're making decisions on longer timelines, that's better for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have one last question. And that is, what is the most salacious deduction you've ever seen?
Salacious. Salacious deduction. I mean, I've certainly seen airplanes that are stretched. Salacious. I don't know if I have any lot of salacious because I'll just straight up ask my client, what the heck is this?
Nothing with a PG-13 rating.
I'm trying to think. I just salacious and tax preparation for me usually don't go hand in hand. So I'm trying to think. I was not prepared for that question.
Okay. Well, think about it. Email me later because I always love
it. Okay. Something will come to mind. I'll be laying in bed tonight and be like, oh, I should have said that. I forgot about this guy.
Yeah. I mean, so one of the.
I mean, I'll put it this way. I've had people that were models come in, you know, come in to ask me about tax preparation and particularly internet models where I'm kind of like, hey, what? It's kind of like we both in the room kind of know what we're talking about here, but not one of us are really saying it. So that was, I don't know, even say PG-13. That was one of the more interesting ones. We did not end up working together. They were trying to write off braces because that obviously affects their modeling career.
Yeah, but there's got to be a fetish out there for braces. You just have to work that fetish.
Yeah, you just got to own it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. The back in the 90s, there was a story going around that the Clintons had deducted their underwear. They had donated their underwear and they had taken a deduction. I'm like, well, at least with Bill, I wouldn't touch that underwear with a 10-foot pole.
No, well, it, you know, it might have some kind of collectible value, I guess.
Wow. Well, hey, Peyton, this has been really good. How can people reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you'd like to get to know more about me and my firm and kind of the work we do there on the tax planning side, you can check us out at squirestaxplanning.com. There's, you know, some quizzes, there's lots of different resources there. And, you know, ultimately you can book a call with us. Love to talk to you about your situation, see if how we may be able to help you. On the personal side, really the business entrepreneur side, like I have my podcast, Behind Their Success. That's at PeytonSquires.com. Or you can just search my name, Peyton Squires, you know, all the different social media stuff. We're putting out content, you know, business content and tax content and all that kind of stuff on a regular basis.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Yeah, absolutely. Craig, appreciate you having me on.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.